And we will go on to case number 042466, Velez Lotero versus Akeem.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Your Honors, if I may, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal time. This appeal presents the narrow question of whether the petitioner's case falls within the Supreme Court's decision in Ines v. St. Cyr. We submit that it does not because the petitioner had no reasonable expectation of discretionary immigration relief at the time that he pled guilty. Thus, the Court should reverse the District Court on this issue of 212C eligibility. Let me begin by providing a brief background of this case. Petitioner is an alien who was found deportable for having been convicted of an aggravated felony conviction, and specifically drug trafficking involving over 900 grams of cocaine. In February of 1995, he pleaded guilty to the aggravated felony charge. Now, under Illinois law, his conviction required a prison sentence of between 15 and 60 years. Petitioner was sentenced to 17 years in jail. In March of 1997, he was ordered deported based on his criminal conviction, and he did not seek any appeal with the Board of Immigration Appeals. Furthermore, in those proceedings in 1997, he did not pursue discretionary immigration relief under Section 212C. In June of 2002, after he had served 5 years in jail, he filed a motion to reopen with the Immigration Court, claiming eligibility for Section 212C relief. The Immigration Court denied the motion to reopen because he had served 5 years in jail and therefore was precluded from eligibility. The Board affirmed. The District Court below reversed, granting habeas relief, finding that the petitioner indeed was eligible for Section 212C relief. For the reasons set forth in our brief...
Can I just stop you for a
minute?
Yes,
Your Honor.
Because if we turn to the last line of St. Cyr, where the court states its holding, what part doesn't apply to Velez Lotero? He would have been eligible at the time of his plea because he wouldn't have served the 5 years yet, and it would seem to be enough. I don't know if you have St. Cyr with you.
I have it over in my suitcase. Should I get it?
Well, should I read it to you?
Sure.
We find nothing in ERIRA unmistakably indicating that Congress considered the question whether it applies repeal of Section 12. We therefore hold that Section 212C relief remains available for aliens like respondent whose convictions were obtained through plea agreements and who, notwithstanding those convictions, would have been eligible for Section 212C relief at the time of their plea under the law then in effect.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. And let me distinguish St. Cyr on several grounds. I think there is, first of all, a fundamental distinction between St. Cyr and this case in the fact that St. Cyr was setting forth a retroactivity analysis. Under Landgraf, the Supreme Court set forth an analysis of when you apply a new statute to conduct that occurred before the statute's enactment. St. Cyr cited Landgraf and applied the Landgraf analysis. The first point, and I think it's a crucial one, there is no retroactivity issue here. The statute that we're looking at here, which is the statute that was in place at the time that the petitioner pled guilty, in fact, the statute, Section 212C, for several years now had contained a bar saying that if someone served 5 years in jail, they would be ineligible for Section 212C relief. That statute was law at the time that he pled guilty. That statute hasn't changed, or it was repealed in 1997, but that repeal is not at issue here.
But that statute is phrased in the past tense. It doesn't say, you know, it says someone who has served 5 years for an aggravated felony.
That's right, Your Honor.
Not and someone who is convicted of and sentenced to.
Right. Now, he had served 5 years on the relevant date, which was the date of the motion to reopen denial. At that time, he had served 5 years. What St. Cyr was doing was engaging in a retroactivity analysis. That's why it was focusing on the time of the plea. St. Cyr involved a statute that was enacted after the alien pled guilty. And the question there was whether that statute was to be applied to pre-enactment conduct, which is the guilty plea. Here we have a statute that has been in effect, I believe, since at least 1990. It might have been 1988. I forget when it was enacted. That makes aliens who have been convicted of aggravated felonies and who have served 5 years in jail, it makes them ineligible for Section 212C relief. That was the state of the law at the time that the petitioner pled guilty. There is no retroactivity issue here.
Well, is there a retroactivity issue vis-a-vis the St. Cyr decision itself and whether that decision is applied retroactively to an alien whose deportation proceedings have long since been finalized? This is a habeas, right?
Yes, but St. Cyr didn't involve the five-year bar. I mean, I think that may be confusing. It's very confusing how these statutes evolved. St. Cyr involved the discussion of a statute in 1996, two statutes, in fact, that made any alien convicted of an aggravated felony ineligible for Section 212C relief, no matter how long they served. But that's not the statute that's been applied in this case. That issue is not before the court. The statute that's being applied in this case that was properly applied by the immigration judge on the motion to reopen is the statute that says that you're ineligible if you serve 5 years in jail. That statute has been on the books for several years, well before the petitioner in this case pled guilty. So we would submit to the court that there's no retroactivity analysis that's involved here. There's just not. I mean, retroactivity involves the question of whether you apply a new statute to pre-enactment conduct. Everything that occurred here occurred after this five-year bar had been in place. The conduct, the conviction, the plea, all of that. So that's not an issue here, and I think that's dispositive of this case. But even assuming that the St. Cyr analysis applies, even assuming that you're looking at his expectations at the time of his plea, obviously, I think there's a clear fundamental difference between this case and St. Cyr. St. Cyr involved a negotiated plea. The Supreme Court was very concerned about the fact that there had been a quid pro quo bargaining process between the government and the defendant alien. And that process resulted in the alien giving up his constitutional right to a criminal defense in exchange for the perceived benefit that there would be eligibility for discretionary relief, because at the time that the alien had pled under the law, that alien was eligible. And then later on, the law changed. In this case, there's no negotiated plea. There's no evidence in the record that there's been any sort of negotiated plea. The petitioner pled guilty, and he was sentenced to 17 years.
So, in other words, what you're saying is he was sentenced to 17 years. He never could have reasonably relied on 212C eligibility when he pled. Is that what you're saying?
That's actually another argument. That's a third argument. I think the second argument focuses on whether there was even anything going on, any reliance or any kind of reliance on 212C going on, because there was no plea agreement, or at least there's no evidence to the record there was a plea agreement. There was just a plea, I guess, in open court. And then there was a sentence of 17 years. But, Your Honor, we do brief in our brief as in another alternative argument, a third argument, which is that the statute at the time, the Illinois statute, required a sentencing of 15 to 60 years because it involved 900 grams of cocaine. And so our argument there is that he could not have had a reasonable expectation. That's another way we would distinguish St. Cyr. Getting back to Judge Rovner, your first question, the whole St. Cyr analysis, what you read was true, but it was all predicated on the reasonable expectation of 212C relief, which we would submit is not at issue here because of that reason as well.
Thank you.
But, Your Honor, I would, I guess, okay, I'll have to save my time. I should follow the lesson of my prior counsel.
Okay.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
James Tumbrook on behalf of Nelson. Ivan Velez-Lutero. Your Honors, I'd like to make a very important point that occurred to me this morning. The court in St. Cyr cited Gideonowo, which is a Seventh Circuit case where this court talks about that particular person's reliance on a negotiated plea agreement, and this court, and this was back in 1995, pre-St. Cyr, where he said, or the court said, because of that reliance, we are not going to retroactively apply the changes to the statute that made that particular alien ineligible for 212C relief. Now, it appears to me then, if the U.S. Supreme Court was aware of that decision and referred to it, but it did not adopt that holding. I mean, the holding is quite different. As Judge Rovner pointed out earlier, there was the holding in St. Cyr refers to or doesn't refer to any sort of reliance. I mean, the court in St. Cyr doesn't talk about the specific facts of the alien St. Cyr entering into a negotiated plea agreement where he may have relied on or did rely upon 212C relief.
Could I ask you some just sort of a bottom line kind of question?
Sure.
At this point, Velez-Lutero has served more than 5 years for an aggravated felony, right?
Yes.
So even if we find he was eligible for relief at the time of his plea, he is no longer eligible, right?
Well, my understanding is that a motion reopen relates back. So therefore, if it relates back, then the court has to consider his eligibility for 212C relief.
It's a discretionary decision by the IJ. If you're right, if he's eligible, then you look and weigh the various factors. And
sure, I understand.
Weighing, I think Judge Rovner's question, weighing the factors and looking at the lengthy prison term that he served and how people are treated now, it's hard to see an exercise of discretion that would be favorable.
Well, he has been released, Your Honor.
I thought he's in custody on this.
He's no longer in custody as of late November. The government released him.
Just released, then.
Just released, right.
Is that in the briefs at the time, he wasn't.
I understand. I just wanted to make that point so I didn't forget it. In any event, he has to demonstrate there's a BIA decision called Marin that talks about rehabilitation and ties to family and so forth. And I understand that it's a hard road to follow, but at least he is eligible for it, and he does have a lot of family members in the United States. Actually, his whole family moved from Colombia to the United States because there was an uncle that was killed, and there were a couple of nephews that were killed, and that relates to a CAT claim that's not within this court's view now, but. There is some, and he's been here for a long time prior to when he got in trouble. So I think that I can at least show that.
Are you an immigration law practitioner?
I practice both immigration and criminal defense.
Are you conceding that the INS, if the INS had waited until after he had served 5 years before initiating deportation proceedings, he would be ineligible for Section 212C relief?
That's correct, yes. Yeah,
so,
I think I'm sorry.
Okay.
And I think that dynamic is well explained in the matter of Ramirez-Somera, which is a 1992 BIA case. And in that case, the alien there had been, he received a 15-year sentence, well, a 3-year and a 15-year sentence, both concurrent, 15 years for a drug trafficking offense. There, he was put in deportation proceedings, I think maybe a year or two after he received that conviction, and the judge there made the same decision that the IJ made here. You're ineligible for relief because you received a sentence over 5 years. Well, there, the BIA said at the same time, record reflects the respondent had not yet actually served either an individual or aggregate five-year period of imprisonment as of the date of the hearing. They went on to conclude he was not, by that reason, statutorily ineligible for relief under Section 212C. And that's directly from the Board of Immigration Appeals. And I think that it is definitely applicable here.
What law is it that you are contending is being impermissibly retroactively applied to your client in violation of the St. Cyr decision?
Well, at the time that he, back in March of 1997, remember, he obtained he was convicted in February 95. He had his deportation hearing in the Illinois Department of Corrections in March of 97. At that time, the law had changed, and the immigration courts were not allowing people to be eligible for 212C relief at the time in 1997.
But that's not the law that's being applied here. The law that's being applied here is the bar against the availability of this discretionary relief to people who have been convicted of aggravated felonies and serve 5 years or more, right? So this doesn't fall within St. Cyr's rule, which had to do with whether the repeal of any discretionary relief could be applied retroactively.
Well,
isn't that what St. Cyr had? What was the law that was at issue in St. Cyr? It was the repeal.
Right.
Right. And well, that's not the law that's being applied here. The law that's being applied was the law that was in existence in 1990, which does apply to your client. So there isn't a retroactivity issue. Which is what St. Cyr was about. You see what I'm driving at?
I think I understand. Essentially, my client is availing himself of 212C at this time, now that the court has reversed that eligibility. I mean, now he's eligible. Eligible for it if this court says he's eligible for it. So if it weren't for St. Cyr, I wouldn't have been able to claim that he was eligible for 212C relief. Because then if St. Cyr had gone a different way, that court would have had to rule that it would have had retroactive effect. And so if it weren't for St. Cyr, I wouldn't have been able to ask for 212C relief. At least does that make any, are we on the same page?
The challenge in St. Cyr was to the retroactive application of the repeal of discretionary withholding of removal, right? That occurred in 1997, I think.
Well,
and that's not at issue here. We're proceeding under 1990 law as it existed and as is applicable to your client, and
right,
it's unavailable to him because by the time he invoked it, he had served more than 5 years.
Oh, okay. I see that. But at the time that he was found to not be eligible for it in 1997, because there's I think the order of the immigration judge makes a finding you're not eligible for anything. I think that's what the order says.
Is it your view that the eligibility is determined at the time of the plea?
Right. I mean, that's how St. Cyr reads, and that is how I would read it, definitely, at the time of the plea. And here at the time of the plea was 1995.
So at the time of the plea, he hadn't yet served 5 years.
No, obviously. He hadn't. No, he hadn't. But at the time that he was before the immigration judge, he had not yet served his 5 years either. And that's when there was the finding that he was ineligible, when, in fact, he was eligible at that time.
Oh, God.
Now, it turns out that there was no written agreement. In state courts, there's usually no written agreement. And that actually goes toward one of the issues raised by the government here, because if there's no written agreement, then we don't know what he's relying upon. And so I think that by putting a gloss over St. Cyr that requires reliance would get into all sorts of reliance claims that I'm not so sure the courts want to entertain. I mean, as I put in my brief, I said something about getting a break in your case. I didn't mean to be so colloquial, but that is something that kind of demonstrates the point of what kind of things the court may have to entertain if it's going to put that kind of gloss that the government wants on St. Cyr. I guess I'm running out of time here. Okay.
Thanks so
okay.
much, Mr. Timbrook. Thank you. Okay.
Your Honors, let me just emphasize again that St. Cyr is not relevant here at all, I would submit to you, despite the party's briefing of that case heavily in our briefs. St. Cyr involved the application of laws in 1996, two laws. The Illegal Immigration Reform and Immigrant Responsibility Act, which repealed Section 212C, which is at issue today, and the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act of 1996, which was before IRERA, and which said extended ineligibility to aliens convicted of certain crimes, no matter how long they had served. The provision at issue before us here today has been in effect for years before 1996, and well before the petitioner pled guilty in 1995. So what we're looking at here is whether or not he had 5 years served, and at the time of his claim of eligibility for Section 212C relief. He never sought Section 212C relief in 1997 during his proceedings. He was ordered deported. That's clear from the record. And so the question then is simply whether the immigration judge found him to properly have 5 years.
What's your view on his eligibility for relief now?
Well, he's ineligible because he served 5 years. And so that's what the immigration judge found. That's what he applied for in his motion to reopen. So he's clearly ineligible because of the law that applies to him. And I'm not sure what else to say. I mean, St. Cyr is not relevant here at all. And there's no merit to the claim that the motion to reopen somehow relates back. I don't understand that argument at all. It was properly before. This is the first time he'd ever raised 212C was in the motion to reopen. The immigration judge, properly looking at the law that applied to him, saw that he had 5 years and found him ineligible. Notably, he does not adequately address our principal, fundamental argument that St. Cyr just doesn't apply. So we would ask that the court reverse the district court on the 212C ground. And it also has set forth in our briefs, we disagree with the district court's conclusory statement that he's eligible for a bond hearing. We ask the court to reverse, or at least to take that language out, reverse on that point, because it could have relevance. No matter what this court decides, this case has to go back to the agency on the issue that the government did not appeal. That's the Convention Against Torture issue. So he could be subject to mandatory detention once again if INS chooses to take him back into custody. We would submit that under Supreme Court case law, DeMoor v. Kim, and this circuit's case law, that the district court was incorrect in finding that he was eligible for a bond hearing.
How many years did he serve?
He served approximately 8 years, Your Honor.
8. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
Was that the sentence cut short because of the immigration hold on him?
No, Your Honor. I actually tried to get that information. Just got it yesterday with the help of the AUSA. It's not in the record. It was cut short because of good time. Essentially, he received
one
day for day. So even if he had assumed that he would have which he could have, let's say going back to St. Cyr, he still would have only had the expectation of serving 8.5 years, still over 5 years. Thank you.
All right. Thanks to both Mr. Timbrook and Mr. Santu and the